I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Berardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
Can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show, just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 15 for July 23rd, 2006. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
And this is John Williams, and today we have a special guest, Chris Sugart from T Nation. He is the assistant editor and the feature writer at T Nation. Sorry, I got
choked
up.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Chris. Let me say that one more time. Sorry, I got choked up on an almond. Sorry about that. Okay. And this is John Williams, and today we're joined by a special guest, Chris Sugart. He is the assistant editor and feature writer at T Nation. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Howdy, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Chris.
Yeah, it should be fun. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah. We've been having several requests to get you on, and finally Lou Schuler shot me an email and said, you know, you got to bring Chris on. He's a great talker, and he has all these great articles, so I'm just glad that you're able to do it.
Thanks a lot. I'll try not to swear.
I can always blank it out. I had to do it with Alan a couple times last week, so.
And Lou. Didn't we get
Of Lou, but I didn't edit that until I got the email from iTunes, and I started the shows a little bit.
That's right. They're going to have to attach an explicit sign next to our podcast if Lou keeps the cursing up.
Yeah.
No, that increases album sales. When you put the parental advisory on there, the album sales actually go up.
Absolutely.
So I heard Steven Tyler of Aerosmith one time. He said that he was going to make sure and include one swear word in every CD from now on because album sales go up. So it's just a strategy I'm throwing out there.
That's
we should just pause here a second and throw out a swear word, and the views will go way up on this one, the download.
You can always blank it out, so. Let's be like inside the actor's studio. What's your favorite curse word?
You know, the secret to cursing is actually not to do it very often,
mm-hmm.
but when
so
you do it,
effective.
Do it with enthusiasm.
For sure.
So you got to drop the F-bomb because it's so versatile. I mean, it can be adjectives and verbs and nouns and... It is great, so that has to be a favorite. But you just can't do that very often. You can't do that when you're ordering dinner. But once a day, well-timed, with enthusiasm, it's a great word.
Absolutely, and one of the things I enjoy about your writing, Chris, is that you're so expressive in your writing. So particularly, we'll talk a little later about your Undercover Wiener series where you're at a yoga, but your descriptive... descriptive words to describe the people you thought would be in this yoga class just had me rolling. So we'll talk about that later, though. So, Kevin, you want to kick us off with the FitCast news?
Definitely. Let's jump right into it. Of course, we're 1 week away from the video FitCast in episode number 15, which will be – actually, it's episode 16 will take place in Denver. And we will have the audio and the video up for that hopefully on Saturday. We're going to try to record it on Friday. So just in case if I screw up or do anything wrong with the editing, we can always have it out by Sunday at the latest. So it should be really fun, and we're not going to edit the video. There isn't going to be any like editing midway through the video because it will obviously be noticeable. So for next week's show, we're going to have to do it spot on, and if something just happens to be in the show that we would want to edit out, it's just going to have to stay there.
That's right.
You might just have to, like, I don't know, we might have to pixelate it, blank it out, whatever you have to do to keep it.
So we're doing like a few 10-minute long ones, right? And then one full-length podcast that's going to go both on video and audio. Is that right?
Correct. We're going to film episode number 16, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to strip the audio out of that and post it on iTunes like every other show, and then we're going to have the video available for download on the fitcast.com, and also we're going to have it up on YouTube, so you won't even have to download it. You can just play it through there, and it should be it should be a good time. It should be enjoyable. And then everyone out there is actually going to see what we look like for the first time, if you haven't already.
And we'll basically be seeing each other face-to-face for the first time.
Exactly.
Too.
Next piece.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So keep a lookout for that. And also, the second piece is I have to let everyone know that Cassandra Forsythe is actually going to have her own website up. It's up right now, but it's going to be finalized within the next couple of days, so keep a lookout for that. It's CassandraForsythe.com. I'm working with her to get that up. We've been conversing through Skype quite a bit to work on that, which should be interesting.
That sounds awesome. Is it going to just be like a collection of her articles?
It's actually going to be a couple different things. She wants to do like a diet diary where she's going to put in everything that she eats every day and just like little tidbits about what she's working on in the lab. And also her articles are going to be up there as well. So it's definitely going to be something to keep a lookout for.
Mm-hmm.
Next piece is just our Fitcast mag. A little bit more news on that is we're going to have reviews on the site in the next couple of days. I actually just went out and I spent a buttload of money, probably more than I should have, on stuff to review. I just picked up Alan's Workout Design Bible, which I've been reading. I'm actually about 70 pages through it, and it's already awesome, but look for a full review of that. And also the JP Fitness Summit DVD. And Eric Cressy's off-season training manual. I'll have reviews for those all in the upcoming weeks. I just have a lot of reading and viewing to do.
Nice.
It's like, it should be, all of them have been great so far. I got to look at the DVD and Alan's workout manual a little bit so far, so keep a lookout for those. And lastly is our Fitcast photos are updated again. We have pictures of Mahler and also Jen Medic. So those will be up on the website later tonight, or by the time you hear this, they'll already be up.
Nice.
So they're getting out there. We're just waiting for some more pictures from the people that have won t-shirts in the past. So.
Very cool.
But that pretty much wraps up for the Fitcast news. Let's jump into our shakes this week. Who wants to go first?
I'd like to hear what Chris is drinking today.
Okay, you can probably tell what I've had. I've had what you call a nuclear sunrise. I've made
nice.
This up myself. Okay, here's what it is. You know, I wanted something. I wanted to wake up in the morning, and what do you want in the morning? Okay, you want your the essential things, which is caffeine and protein, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually been some interesting news here lately. Dave Barr, really smart guy, doesn't get enough airtime or credit, really, because he's amazingly mm-hmm. bright. David Barr, who writes for T-Nation, he is a big believer in the morning period. Like when you first wake up in the morning, your muscles and your body are just ready basically for like a post-workout drink practically. I mean, this guy wakes up and literally slams a full serving of Surge, which is, of course, your high-carb protein drink with your fast-acting carbs and fast-acting protein and aminos and all that good stuff. And now, I haven't gone quite that far yet. I've got the whole former fat boy syndrome here going, so waking up and slamming a post-workout drink after sleeping for 8 hours is still kind of scary for me. But he's got some really good information to back it up. But I have adopted part of this. So what I'm doing is I'm waking up in the morning, and I'm slamming some fast-acting whey. And I use the Biotest Grow Premium Whey. But I want my caffeine in there, too. And I don't necessarily want a whole lot of, you know, like chocolate flavored type stuff of the morning. So I came up with this nuclear sunrise. What it is, it's the Biotest Grow Whey mixed with a drink called Morning Spark. And this is a sugar-free, fake orange juice, basically. And you can get it, like, at the Super Walmarts is the only place I've seen it. I've tried to find it online, and I can't find it. But it's like a hyper-caffeinated fake orange drink.
Oh, yeah?
And then instead of using water, you can use, like, Crystal Light Sunrise, which is another fake orange drink. Mm-hmm. Or you can use, there's a generic version out there. I'm real big on Super Walmart here because I'm a complete redneck, obviously. And you can use something called Early Rise, which is the generic version of Crystal Light, sitting right beside of it at Wally World. So you mix the Morning Spark in with the Crystal Light or the fake Crystal Light orange drink, and you throw in a whey or even, like, a vanilla like a vanilla metabolic drive or anything like that will work fine. And you mix all that up together and you slam it, and it's this intensely orange-flavored, hyper-caffeinated, fast-acting protein just to get your butt moving. And then I have like a regular breakfast 30, 40 minutes later. But
that sounds awesome.
That's the way to wake up right there, protein and caffeine.
You know, you definitely have a better idea of how to incorporate caffeine into a shake, because you might have seen Kevin's attempt to mix diet sodas in with various protein powders. Although I heard from Kevin,
you get the
earlier.
Mentos effect sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think Kevin might be mixing some diet soda today, maybe.
Uh-oh.
Is that right?
That is correct. I kind of teased about this a little bit on the forums. I was going to come out this week with one hell of a shake, and I think I pulled it off. I did some testing a couple days ago, just I was curious, around the house. I had some diet soda, and I went back at one more attempt of the Diet A&W Root Beer protein shake. Okay, stick with me for a second. This is not something... A warning. This is not something that you want to be drinking every day. It's going to give you bubble guts. So if your stomach is sensitive, don't even try this. This is the FitCast warning for this week, all right? First off, we have a 12-ounce can of Diet A&W Root Beer, plain and simple. One scoop of low-carb metabolic drive vanilla flavor. I think this might be what saved it, because before I was using the on casein, and it tasted like crap in whatever I used, so this might be the saving factor. So I had to try. And also, one teaspoon of ground cinnamon. So I got a little bit of fiber, one teaspoon of Splenda, a half a cup of ice, and then to make it somewhat healthy, after that I popped 12 capsules of Greens Plus, which is the stand. That's a standard serving. It sounds crazy, but it's a standard serving. And this thing tastes awesome.
No kidding. That's a lot. That's a lot of cinnamon in there. A whole teaspoon.
Yeah, I like the cinnamon. I like the cinnamon. And it honestly tastes really good. If you want to give this a shot for a soda shake, like I might drink this. Probably not every week, depending on how my stomach is, but I might even give it a shot for the video episode that we're going to do next week and prove to you guys that it really does taste good.
That has to be an ugly shake, though.
It is kind of looks like it looks like something that might happen if you drink too many of these, but it tastes good, though. It really does
so
taste good.
Root beer and vanilla and cinnamon, I guess.
Yeah, it's 20 grams of protein. I think it's 4 grams of fiber. I mean, you can't really go wrong with this. Plus, with the Greens Plus, you're getting like a couple servings of vegetables in there, too. So
There you go. That sounds awesome. I'd try it.
Interesting.
You know, I was sort of opposed to actually trying any soda shakes, but, you know. You've piqued my interest, Kevin.
Well, I'll have the recipe up on thefitcast.com, obviously, along with all the show notes, so keep that in mind. I had to throw that in there.
Well, my shake, I've been sort of on a roll of not making very good shakes lately. So I've been trying pomegranate juice lately, because I've been reading articles about how great pomegranate is for you, and it has some of the highest levels of antioxidants. So I got some pomegranate juice, and I did a workout earlier, and the pomegranate juice, I haven't been able to find any that doesn't have a boatload of sugar in it. So this one does have sugar in it, but I use that for my post-workout glucose fix. And so I mixed some of that, and I couldn't figure out what sort of protein to mix in there, like maybe some cottage cheese, but that sounded really gross. And I haven't ordered from T Nation lately, so I didn't have any sort of vanilla metabolic drive. So I did have some muscle milk, blueberries and cream muscle milk. So I tried that, and it's just, you know, it's a little over the top on the berry flavor. This pomegranate's got sort of really tart. It's got a really strong flavor. You mix that with the blueberries, it's sort of like, you know, it's way too much. So not too impressed with that. So again, a challenge to the listeners, if anyone can figure out what to mix with pomegranate juice. I have a have a hunch that vanilla flavored metabolic drive would be a better choice.
Maybe yeah, so that can be a vanilla flavor of anything can be really versatile when it comes to making all these crazy shakes. That's like a staple. You know, you got to have your vanilla. And for hardly ever have a plain vanilla shake, but it's nice to have it just for all these crazy ideas. It tends to go with everything. But I had the same problem with you with the pomegranate stuff. You know, I would read all the great stuff, and then I would go look at the juice, and I would think, I'm not going to consume this much sugar. I'll just take some pills to get the antioxidants, you know.
Yeah.
But if you hear about some sort of a where they don't add, I don't mind the natural sugars, but when they just throw in all the extra sugar, it's like, one part's healthy, then the other part they screw it up by flavoring it. So be careful there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I think there's 25 grams of sugar per serving, and each small bottle has 2.5 servings. So you're getting like almost 60 grams of sugar.
Yeah, definitely post-workout stuff, though. You can get away with that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that sounds good. You know, I think we actually have a News of the Week music this week. Isn't that right, Kevin?
Yeah, let's kick it off.
FitCast, we report, you decide. Well, news this week. Let me kick off the news this week with interesting article. At least I thought it was interesting, about America's bottled water industry, and the title is America's $8 billion bottled water industry a fraud? And as the title says, we should probably not be paying a dollar or even 2 cents, for that matter, for some of these bottled waters. Basically, this widening spectrum of bottled water types are crowding the market. You guys have probably seen them too. You know, you have your basic spring water and mineral water and purified water and distilled water and carbonated and oxygenated. Although caffeinated does sound pretty good sometimes, but they also have the vitamin enriched waters and all these other things. The article goes on to say that this industry has basically exploded in recent years and enjoys annual sales of more than $35 billion worldwide. So it's huge. And it's a long article. I would suggest reading it, but basically they're showing that it's not regulated. The EPA will regulate the quality of public water supplies, but it has no authority over bottled water. And there's been a lot of incidents where, you know, bottled water is actually just tap water, and they can get away with a lot of things, fraudulent things, just by tweaking their wording. They often don't check for E. coli and some of these nasty other things. And there's some statistics in there, such as the price of one bottle of Evian water. For the price of one bottle, you can use 1,000 gallons of tap water in your home. So that sort of clinches it. And also, they show that tap water ain't all that bad. There's not a lot of cases of tap water being tainted, although it may not taste the greatest. You can always get like one of those Brita filters or whatnot. I've read an article. T-Nation actually had a really good article about sources of water, and way back when. I read it like 3 years ago, and they recommended distilled water if you're going to buy something besides tap water, because it's sort of the safest. And occasionally I'll get, distilled water as well. But I thought it was just an interesting article.
Yeah, I like.
There's some crickets there. I actually heard crickets.
Apparently not.
Well, what's the I was trying to remember what that water was that like Madonna and all those celebrities drink. Some like Buddhist water.
Oh,
anyone
know
this?
Kabbalah water?
Yeah, Kabbalah water. It's like $10 a bottle.
Nice.
Yeah, but you can make a very good living just basically making dumb crap that celebrities will buy. You never know. I'm going to go into business, and my entire clientele is going to include celebrities with way too much money. You know, if a rapper has, $9,000 of jewelry in his teeth, then you bet. I'm going to come up with a bottled water for him, bling bling water or whatever. But
nice.
What I like with the bottled water stuff is I have a hard time buying it unless I'm just forced to. You know, you're at an airport or something, you don't want to drink warm tap water. But I have a hard time buying it unless it's flavored. So I like the lightly flavored stuff. Mm-hmm. If I have to buy it, I mean, it's still probably a ripoff, and yeah, I know it probably is, but the Gatorade Propel is really good. Powerade just came out with their version of it. You do get 5 or 10 calories per serving with that, but at least it tastes good, you know. I think that's the advantage of all that. If we got people to buy, drink more water instead of full sugar sodas, it's a good thing, but
right.
Yeah, it probably is better that we just all bought a little filter for our tap water and we'd be better off, but well, at least if it's flavored, you'll drink more.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I definitely do the Brita filter for myself. I mean, up at school, I have one of those just little Brita filter things. I keep a 1 gallon jug full of water that I'll get from the kitchen because I drink more water than someone probably should. I get thirsty all the time, and I mean, why not? Might as well drink some water. But I mean, that's definitely the way to go. I don't know how much money you're saving, but I'm definitely a sucker also for just bottled water. I mean, I buy a crap ton of that stuff.
You know, that one of the problems with bottled water too that they mentioned in the article is the plastic bottles themselves. You know, and being working over in the Middle East, I've witnessed that they'll have these flash floods in the desert basically, and once a year these arroyos will flow with water. And I witnessed one of these, and it looked like some post-apocalyptic movie because here's this desert, and it's got this big, muddy river flowing through it, and the river just basically was just flooded with these plastic water bottles. Like, it was just nasty, and it basically just flooded all of these water bottles for miles around into this narrow valley. And these things really do stay around for a long time. It's kind of gross, you know? People just chuck them around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kevin,
yes.
How about your article?
I got a very interesting article this week. Again, I'm pulling my story from the New York Times. It's called Chicago Weighs New Prohibition, Bad for You Fats. Edward Burke, who has served on the Chicago City Council since 1969, is pressing his colleagues to make it illegal for restaurants to use oils that contain trans fats. If approved, it will be the first time trans fats have ever been banned in a major city. The mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley, is against the proposal, asking, "Is this city council going to plan our meals?" Establishments would be fined $200 to $1,000 a day until removal of the trans fats. People opposed to the argument are saying things like, "Restaurants will be hurt, especially the mom-and-pop restaurants that cannot afford other oils." And the question I have to you guys is, can we allow people to make their own choices, whether choosing a meal with trans fats at a restaurant, or do they need to make a change because people won't make the change for themselves? Like, say, like if they have that Kentucky Fried Chicken and they're selling it with the trans fats, does the government have to step in and say, you can't sell the trans fats anymore because people won't make the decision for themselves?
Right. Well, I'm interested in hearing Chris's opinion on this.
I just want to know, if they take the trans fats out of my McNuggets, can I still have it with cigarettes and whiskey?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's what I kind of, you know, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, let's get rid of all trans fats because there's no good to come up with. I mean, you can even make an argument for saturated fats, or, you know, you need a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit are fine, maybe even have some benefits, but it's hard to make an argument for trans fats. But I heard Kevin say this a few episodes ago, and I have this libertarian side where I just can't stand the idea of someone else coming in and making these sweeping laws to get rid of stuff when it's taking away personal choice. And it sounds crazy, but you know, if you're going to take away ephedrine, but we're going to leave cigarettes on the market, we're going to get rid of trans fats, but we're going to sell. I mean, I'm not for prohibition or anything, but, you know, the root word of intoxication is toxic. It means poison. You drink too much, you die. You drink a little bit, you only get partially poisoned. We call that being drunk. So it's a little surprising that this toxic thing over here is perfectly fine, but this other thing is bad. And how we draw the lines and how we make the laws and the politics involved just really have me pulling out my hair.
Right.
So I'm really torn about this. Yeah, get rid of the trans fats. Great idea. But at the same time, that libertarian side kicks in, and I don't like the idea.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree too. People know that cheese fries are not good for you, so eat something else. You know, and it's not that hard to figure out what foods don't have trans fat in them. So,
by the way, I read this just the other day. You guys. In fact, I may have heard this on this show. American McDonald's, the amount of trans fat they use is very different than the amount used in other McDonald's and other places. I think they were using an example of like Ireland or something like that. And American McDonald's has, I don't remember what it was, a whole lot more trans fat and trans fatty acids. And it's really interesting because you think, well, why are they putting these in there? Well, what's the point of having something that's so bad for you? Why is it in there? And this is what no one's saying. No one's saying is, you know what? They taste real good.
Yeah.
And Americans like more and more and more and more of it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's good with a little bit of sugar, let's put five times the amount in there.
And in fact,
it sounds horrible, but it sells.
Right. And the fact is, if people ate, you know, one small thing of McDonald's French fries once a week and consumed them with trans fatty acids, yet they had a healthy lifestyle otherwise, it wouldn't matter. So, you know, it's just overconsumption. If you eat, it's the calories and the imbalance and the fatty acid profile and all kinds of, you know, the insulin sensitivity issues that makes people, you know, sick in the long run. So it's kind of funny to point the finger at trans fats. It might be a small step, and certainly some good could come out of it, but there's a lot more bad that could come out of it, in my opinion.
I just wish.
By the way, another funny thing. I'm sorry. Another funny thing about the trans fats that I just find this hilarious. Walk through your local grocery store and look at all the things now that are labeled trans fat free.
Yeah, like
things that
like
never
steak.
Had it in there to begin with.
Like steaks.
This reminds me back in the back in the 80s. It was fat free. Everything had to be fat free. So
right.
Hershey's chocolate syrup, liquid sugar here, came out with these big labels, fat-free. And these people these dieters would, you know, even though you're just pouring pure sugar calories over whatever you're using that stuff on, would buy it up. So now everything is no trans fats. And, you know, and it's something like jelly. It never had any to begin with, you know.
Yeah, I actually saw when low-carb was big just last year, some grocery store had a low carb section, and there was a thing of ground beef labeled low carb. Like, you gotta be kidding me!
Bucket of lard.
Yeah.
Atkins approved.
Low carb.
Well, the thing that I was gonna say is that I mean, people just don't get it sometimes. I mean, maybe it's at the point where they have to do something about it. Maybe just in the restaurant section, especially when. On the menu, they don't know if there's trans fats in it. I mean, they could probably just ask the waitress or the waiter. But I just don't see people changing that much. I mean, even the last couple of years, it's just getting worse. It's not getting better. Maybe they should go a different route and just try to educate the people of Chicago more. This article was brought up because they're having like a food tasting festival. Maybe they should have had a booth up there just... with some facts on trans fats. Like, almost half the food that was being served there had a crap ton of trans fats in it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great, Chicago, but, you know, maybe instead of banning it, just educate the people a little bit more. I mean, you just have to cram it into their heads. People aren't getting it still.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think it's kind of condescending that the whole thing about regulations in the first place, because... You know, yeah, there might be a lot of dumb people out there that don't know about it, but it is assuming that people are so dumb that you have to ban it so they won't eat it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a condescending concept to begin with.
I always say, you know, the number one tip you could ever give anybody is say, you know, they're trying to lose weight or anything, and you say, okay, think of all the things that you do that you know are really, really bad for you, and they go, okay, I got it, and you go, stop it!
Yeah.
Because they know. Most of them really – now, trans fats, that can get kind of weird. You know, most people really don't have a clear idea of exactly what that is except that they're bad, and Hershey's chocolate syrup doesn't contain them, so it must be good. But most people know. I mean, you know, like one of you guys said earlier, you don't go to McDonald's and order fries and think you're doing something healthy. And if you are, then – what is that, the Darwin effect? Is that what that's called?
Yeah. Yeah, becoming a Darwinian zero. Yeah, well, Chris, let's move on to your news story. You had some something that piqued my interest, too.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. I received a call from Tim Patterson a couple of weeks ago, and he said, Chris, come out to Colorado Springs and come watch the Spike Professional Cycling Team. Biotest is now the main sponsor of this this professional cycling team. These are the guys who compete mostly in these velodromes, these big concrete or wooden death structures, mm-hmm. basically is what they are. It's amazing racing, and a lot of it is very sprint related. So as a weight trainer, we can kind of bond with those people. They have the biggest quad you've ever seen in your life, and they race on these really awesome specialized bicycles with no brakes. They're not allowed on the road. They're specifically these race bikes designed for velodromes, and it's really intense. So I had a chance to go out and watch those guys, and I didn't even know about this. But apparently, Biotest, for you guys who are really into bicycling of any kind, you may want to head on over to spikebike.com, spikebike.com, and we're giving away like a road version of one of these bikes as part of our sponsorship of the Spike Professional Cycling Team. So you may want to head on over to do that. I just thought that was kind of cool because I'm recently getting back into biking myself, and I find these athletes, just especially the sprinters, they're just fascinating. You've never seen leg muscles like this in your life. Yes, even bodybuilders would admire the leg muscles on these guys. It's an amazing sport, and of course Spike is the Biotest stimulant that wildly successful. It's in Walmart now and everything. Everybody's going crazy over it. But I hear I'm never sure what I'm supposed to say and what I'm not supposed to say. But I think there's some ads out about this now, so I'm probably allowed to say this. So there is going to be a shooter version of Spike, and what you do, you inject it directly into your forehead. No,
it's
a liquid version. It's going to be like a Red Bull. I hate to even compare it to Red Bull because I think Red Bull is completely overrated. But you know, this stuff is going to knock you on your ass and in liquid form. So I'm excited about that, but. Spikebike.com for anybody interested in that. If you're into any of the bicycling sports, you've got to check out your local velodrome or something, because this is, at one point, they were actually washing the blood off the track with Gatorade.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, if you like NASCAR, this is great, because you can actually see the limbs fly off. So it's really cool.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I have to try the liquid version. And you're right about the sprinter biker's legs. They're just freaking huge. I actually saw, I went to the Science Museum here in Denver a few weeks ago to see the Body World exhibit. But I also went in to see this IMAX show about cycling. It was about the Tour de France. And, you know, you see Lance Armstrong a lot, and his legs don't look that big, but it showed a lot of sprinters that also engaged in that race, and they have these enormous quads. It's just amazing. If you look at the difference between the sprinters versus the long-distance bikers, my God. So I assume, Chris, that all these guys are basically sprinters.
We have a few people on the team that especially – there's nothing too long-distance in the velodrome sports. It's all new to me. I'm just now learning it all. There's a few – longer distance events, but they're really kind of boring to watch. What you go to watch are the sprints, mm-hmm. and the legs and glutes and hams on these guys and the quads is just incredible. And the girls, you should see the women that are involved in this sport. You're talking like most of them are at ridiculously low body fat percent levels, but yet mm-hmm. they have the talk about buns of steel. Their legs are just amazing. You've never seen legs like this in your life. I mm-hmm. wrote in my blog recently. I have a female jock fetish now. Female jocks, female athletes. So yeah, check it out if you've never checked it out before. It's really fun, and it will make you want to. In fact, I did. I went and I bought a bike after viewing this, and part of my leg training now is going out a couple of times a week and just sprinting the bike. Mm-hmm. And the workouts literally take, I mean, even between the sprints and everything, my workouts are like 12 minutes. And I'm going to do a little experiment to see how much upper leg growth I can get by reducing the amount of leg work I do in the gym and increasing the amount of bike sprints I do to a couple of times a week. So we'll see how that works mm-hmm. out.
Cool. Sounds good. Awesome. Well, let's jump into the round table discussion. You want to introduce that, Kevin? I don't mean to.
Definitely. Chris, I just wanted to start off with a question that I had for you, formerly being someone that's gone on the Velocity diet and been successful with it.
Mm-hmm.
How about some info on the upcoming Velocity diet book, and how are you going to market this book to the everyday person wanting to lose fat fast?
Okay. Well, for what a lot of people may not know, if they're not familiar with the Velocity diet, basically what it is, for many, many years now, there have been liquid diets around, and a lot of these started out in like surgical settings where like this obese person needed some sort of surgery, but the surgeons couldn't do it. They were just too big. So they would put them on this liquid fast, and they would drop an enormous amount of weight. And they would have to be monitored by their doctors, and it was really unhealthy, but it was, you know, it was an emergency situation. They had to do it because it was more unhealthy not to get the surgery. And we published like a bodybuilder version of this several years ago, and it wasn't that successful. The failure rate was just really high with it. So I love the idea. I love the idea of basically drinking shakes all day and dropping fat really quickly while retaining as much muscle as possible. So I came out with my version of it, which I call the Velocity Diet. And it is basically 28 days of nothing but liquid meals, except for one solid meal, one healthy, it's not a cheat meal, one healthy solid meal per week. And it was just a knockout. It really worked well. The success rate was much, much higher than I've ever seen. I lost 16 pounds in 28 days. I've heard of people losing 23, 24 pounds in 28 days. Obviously, there's a little bit of water and glycogen weight there, a little bit. And it also depends on how much you have to lose, because as John Berardi and a lot of guys have talked about, the more fat you have to lose, the bigger you are, the more will just peel off of you on any good diet. I mean, they always say you can only lose a pound a week safely without losing muscle. Well, a fatter person can lose 4 or 5 a week, and they're fine. Now, obviously, if you're already starting out with a six-pack and you're just wanting to go to 9% to 6%, you shouldn't expect 20 pounds of fat loss on any diet. You don't have it to lose, and it's going to be much slower, et cetera. But people are having amazing results with this. But, yeah, you're right. As far as, like, the marketing of it, now, I was just recently given permission to from the testosterone publishing arm to go with it and to try to get a book out of this. And it's kind of interesting because it is a hardcore diet, but I would really like to introduce this to a larger audience, mainly because of a side effect that it has. I don't really want to market it as rapid fat loss. I mean, that's kind of overdone. Yeah, you get that. Most people between 10 and 20 pounds in 28 days. But the really cool thing is there's this side effect to the diet where you lose all your cravings for the foods that got you too fat to begin with, and you simultaneously develop cravings for healthy foods that you may have never, ever liked before. Like for me, I would occasionally force down a piece of broccoli because I knew it was healthy, and I mean just rarely I would gag it down, chew it real quick, and swallow, and just once a week, one piece of broccoli, because I knew it was healthy. During the process of this diet, I would have my one solid meal a week. And I went to Texas Roadhouse a lot, and I would have like a steak, a naked sweet potato, and a side order of broccoli. And as the 4 weeks went on, I found myself wanting the broccoli and the side salad more than anything. And by the time the diet was over with, I could look at a piece of something that was fried and just almost gag. And I would look at broccoli and my mouth would water. And the cool thing about it is this stuck.
These
behavioral changes totally stuck. And I thought it was just me. I like briefly mentioned it in the second part of the article in my blog. I did a little write-up on kind of how I came off the diet and everything. And I briefly mentioned it, but it's become obvious over the almost 2 years now since the articles first appeared on the web, that everyone, and almost everyone, is getting the effect if they do the diet in a really strict form. But how do you market that towards a wider audience, which is my goal with this? Well, I got to thinking about that, and I started thinking about what most people are used to when they think of a liquid diet. And what they think of is what all of our moms and grandmas have done for years, which is the Slim Fast plan. Now, you think about this. Now, this to me is hardcore. For breakfast, you have 12 ounces of low-quality protein, and you get just a few grams. I mean, it's recently they've been advertising high protein. Now it's high protein, so I think they went from like 8 grams to 10 grams or something. I don't know. And then for lunch, you have another 12 ounces of this thin, crappy-tasting liquid. And then at night, you're supposed to have a sensible dinner. Now, personally, I would come home and eat the family dog alive if all I've had is 24 ounces of crappy protein over there, especially these RTDs, these ready-to-drinks, because they have to cook the protein, and it's really bad in that form. Now, you think about that. I did the numbers years ago. I haven't looked into it lately, but I did the numbers years ago, and it was something like 800 to 1,000 calories a day is what the Slim Fast plan called for. So these people were losing, they'd lose weight, all right, but they were losing muscle. They were starving to death. Most of them were binging at night. You know they were. They would get very temporary results, and then they would lose muscle while they were on it, which that's your only real metabolically active tissue. So their metabolisms would be shot. So you have women who've been doing the Slim Fast plan for 10 years but are magically getting fatter. which I find amazing that they do this, because, you know, they think the diet worked. Yeah, it worked. I lost 7 pounds. But
then you gained back 15.
Exactly. And then they lose 8. Then they gain back 10. And the next thing you know, they've been dieting for 10 years and they're fatter than ever. So I think the more average person market would be more open to this than maybe I originally thought. First thing I would do, I would market the behavioral changes and not necessarily just the fast fat loss changes, because you just do it for 28 days, and then these changes tend to stick, these behavior changes. And then I think if people are used to the Slim Fast plan, then having 4 or 5 thick filling shakes a day, the Velocity Diet actually has the recommended amount of fiber in soluble and insoluble form, so it's not really that much of a deprivation for most people. So I sold it as a real hardcore diet. You know, when I went on it, my article was like, I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do this, and if I die, fine, but I'm going to die lean, damn it. And then as the diet went on, I thought, you know, this isn't quite as bad as I thought it would be. And then I got feedback from a lot of people on the T-Nation site, and it's not as bad as what you think it would be.
You take some precautions in the diet.
4 or 5 shakes a day.
Chris, you take some precautions in the diet, don't you, to make sure that people are getting more nutrients than, for example, just protein. So they're not basically starving themselves to death, right? There's
fish oil capsules,
and there's, where do you get the fiber
sure.
from?
We have healthy fats. There's plenty of healthy fats in there with mainly fish oil capsules, and I also recommend milled flax seeds, and I'm someone who hates flaxseed oil. I think it's just a sin to take a great-tasting metabolic drive shake or something and pour in flaxseed oil. You know, you should be ashamed. But milled flax seeds are much more mild, and you don't get quite as much of the good fats in there, so you have to mix it up with some fish oil capsules and stuff. Or you can take flax oil capsules, too, but I think fish oil is definitely the best. And so your milled flax also acts as a fiber source. It's a really good fiber source. You can also use a guar gum type that you can throw this in a shake. You've probably seen this as Benefiber, and there's some generic brands out there too, which is, I believe that's a soluble fiber you can throw into these shakes. So yeah, you're getting your fiber, you're getting your healthy fats, you're getting plenty. It's a high protein diet. You're getting plenty of protein in there, and the calories aren't ridiculously low. I mean, someone who's used to the Slim Fast plan would be full. In fact, I've had people tell me, I didn't get in my, it depends on how many you need and your body weight, et cetera, whether you need 4 or 5 shakes a day, but some people, I didn't get in my last shake of the day. I was just full and I forgot. No one on the Slim Fast plan forgets to have their last healthy meal of the day. So I think there's potential there to actually get it out into a larger audience. My only worry with a larger audience is I'm really big on, you know, you don't diet without weight training. And that's something that's still hard to this day to sell a lot of women on weight training. Mm-hmm. So that's the only tough part of the marketing, I think.
So any idea when it might come out?
We are just, I literally just got the word about this about a week or two ago. So we have some really cool, the testosterone, I'm not really heavily, this is all TC and Tim's deal, I'm not heavily involved in this, but as far as I know, we are going to be publishing some books, and I believe Ellington Darden, we're going to do one for him. He's a buddy of Tim's from way back, and he has some interesting ideas. And I really like some of his old school approaches, and he has great stories. His books are, even if you don't do the workouts, his books are really fun to read. So I think we may be doing a book for him. TC's going to have a book. If you like his Atomic Dogs, I think you're really going to like this book. I haven't seen anything of it yet, but I think that's going to be really good. And mine, I think, might be third in line. So we'll see. It could be a year or so, but I think it's going to be huge. I think it has the potential to really go huge, household name huge.
Nice. Awesome. That sounds awesome. You know, Chris, you have this awesome blog, and there's a lot of readers of it called Sugart's Hammer over at T Nation, and I just sort of wanted to pick your brain about that. Sometimes we get a peek at your views on psychological and mental aspects of dieting and lifting. So, mm-hmm. How do you think people can make it a lifestyle rather than something they sort of hate to do, but force themselves to do?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I was I'm an English major by trade, and majored in English, and then I had an education certification on top of that, and then I went ahead and had a major in psychology, and I just took the psychology because I needed a secondary teaching field, and I thought it was kind of interesting. Ended up taking some extra classes and made it a major. Really didn't think I would do anything with it. Turns out that's the most important thing I could have ever studied in the health, fitness, bodybuilding, athletic performance field is the psychology of it all. So yeah, I do tend to ramble on about that in the blog quite a bit. That's a great question. I did a whole article about this one time called The Transition, and you can find it at tnation.com archives. I think it was just called The Transition, and that's my term for someone who now lives this lifestyle. They eat healthy because they want to eat healthy. They train right because if they skip 3 days in the gym, they start to get the jitters. They love training. Because what most people do when they start out is they don't like it. They have to be forced into it. My best friend is an awesome personal trainer. That's one. There aren't that many good ones. That's one. Is an incredible personal trainer. And she'll tell you straight out, most people need a personal trainer, not because of the trainer's advice or they know great workouts or whatever, but because they need the appointment, because they hate coming to the gym. Now, you say that to we guys sitting here, T Nation audience, FitCast audience, JP Fitness audience, you know, you talk to, we think you're nuts. Well, you got to talk us out of going to the gym.
Exactly.
Like, you trained twice today already. Stay out of the damn gym.
Yeah.
But we have made that transition, and a lot of people haven't. And I really think it all comes down to basic reinforcement psychology. People have to see somewhat of a result. And when they start seeing results, you all of a sudden, if you're a trainer or something, you all of a sudden, you don't have to force them to do one more set. They want to do one more set. You don't have to force them not to eat a certain thing because they're seeing pretty good results with what changes they are making, and so they want to make even more changes to get even better results. And they have to have that reinforcement. You know, I often tell women to go ahead and use the scale once a week or so, but take measurements, like with the fabric tape measures. And the reason why I do that is, you know, we live in an instant gratification society. And people are actually not happy. You know, a pound a week, losing a pound of pure fat a week is great. And people aren't happy with that. So you tell the average person, wow, in a month you could weigh 4 pounds less. And they're like, well, why even bother? Mm-hmm. They don't care. But if you get them to take measurements, like measure around the calves, around the upper thighs, around the waist, around the chest area, upper arm, neck, everywhere possible, more measurements possible, the better. What you'll notice is maybe they only lost a pound that week, but if you add up all those measurements and do the math from last week's measurements, then you get 4 inches. Now, tell a woman she's lost 4 inches of fat. Now she's excited.
Right.
Now she's not canceling her Wednesday appointment. You know, now she's saying, we've been going 45 minutes, can we go an hour? And you almost have to hold them back at that point, and as a trainer, that's what you want. And I'm not a personal trainer, but as someone who writes articles and is in the business from that regard, that's what I want. I want people getting such good results they want to do more and maybe have to be held back a little bit because they're making that psychological transition where they're going to love this after a while. But it's all about just basic, raw reinforcement.
Right. That's an excellent point. I've noticed in my personal training over the years, the times when I'm doing worse are the times when I don't have clear set goals and I'm not striving to achieve something in a certain amount of time. The more sort of regimented and goal-oriented you are, I found, like you said, the better off you are at getting into the gym
and guys need to do this too. I was using women as an example earlier. I believe it was probably ripping off Charles Staley, maybe Dan John here. Can't remember who I'm ripping off. I'm ripping off somebody right now. They talk about what men need to do is have multiple measurements of progress. And in other words, don't just measure your arms every month and go, oh, I didn't make any progress this week. Well, maybe you got stronger. Maybe your vertical jump got higher. Mm-hmm. Maybe you lost a half an inch in your waist, you know, if you're more of an aesthetic bodybuilder type. But we tend to only look at one type of measurement. So to keep that going, to keep psychologically motivated, you need to measure all different types of progress. And the more you do that, the better. And one more cool thing I want to throw in here is it takes about 20, most behavioral psychologists agree, it takes about 21 days to change a habit. So, man, 21 days in today's instant gratification society is really tough. But if you think about what you can accomplish in 21 days in the gym, and I'm going to attempt to do math here. Well, this is going to be tough. I think you can change about 17 habits a year if you focus on one little thing at a time. So you imagine if you dump your sugared soft drink addiction, if you dump your fried food addiction, if you dump your sitting on your butt all day addiction, and you do something in 21 days, in a year you could be psychologically a completely different person, and of course your body is going to change dramatically during that time as well. So the trick is, I think, is for people to last over 21 days so they can see a result. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that's kind of the cool part of the Velocity Diet because, yeah, people do lose 4 or 5 pounds in the first week, and maybe a couple of pounds of that is water, but who cares? They're going to keep going because they're motivated.
Cool. We'll head on to the next question. This actually comes from JP of JP Fitness. And he says, I love your writing style. I'd actually like to know more about your background in journalism and also what led you to T-Nation.
I don't have a background in journalism. TC and I have talked about this. This may be kind of a good thing. You know, TC's always, I've talked about, hey, I read a really good book on how to write better. You know, and TC's like, I don't want to read it because I'm afraid that it will mess up, you know, my own natural style and ability, or I start to try to do something by the book and I get boring, or that's kind of the way I think about it at least. So he doesn't want to be taught formal. I mean, he does have a lot of formal education in this, but he doesn't want to read the latest book on how to write better. And I can kind of understand that. So I'm almost glad that I don't have a normal journalism background because I'd probably be really boring if I did. But I do have an English degree background, and I started out as a high school teacher. Got out of college and was teaching high school. I graduated from college a little early, and then I taught at the upper levels of high school. So I was at one time, I think I was 3 years older than my students, and I was 4 years older than I was about 4 years older than most of my students, and 3 years older than some of them. So I started out as a which made it really awkward when I would date the students. But no, I'm kidding.
I kid.
But I taught school for several years, and T-Nation, kind of known as T-Mag back then. Was my favorite online magazine. I kind of followed TC and Charles Poliquin over from Muscle Media 2000. You know, that magazine kind of castrated itself, and I don't know what it became, and it finally got dumped. And so I found TC and Poliquin through just a web search one day, like just going to yahoo.com and typing in their names, and I found like the second or third T-Nation used to come out, all the articles used to come out once a week, like an edition. And I found it like on the second or third edition of Testosterone Magazine online. And I would read the articles. I loved it. I really learned how to train and eat that way. And I had a couple of, we used to have a reader mail section. Now that we have a forum, we really don't need a reader mail section all that much, but I wrote TC a couple of emails that ended up getting published as like reader mails. And not long after that, someone asked in the reader mail section, they said, how can I write an article for T-Nation? And TC said, just send me an article, and he gave the basic instructions on how to do it. And I'm still teaching high school at this time, so one Sunday morning, I got up really early and took a bunch of ephedrine, and so I was bouncing off the walls, and I sat down, and I came up with three or four ideas for article ideas that I write, and I shot them to TC, and he sent me a letter back, and I was shocked. TC wrote me back. Wow. And he's really good about that, actually, but I was shocked. And he told me to go for a couple of the articles, and I think out of the two that I wrote, one of them was published, and I started freelancing a little bit, and over the next year or so, he kind of took me under his wing and trained me in, you know, how to edit articles and how to do this and how to do that. And after that year was up, I worked kind of part-time for T-Nation while I taught my last year. And he asked me to join full-time, and I went for it. And that's been 8 years this summer, I think. So it worked out really well.
Well, they certainly keep you busy over there. You're one of the most productive writers I think I've ever seen. You and Lou Schuller together. They're just
Schuller,
some of the
Lou
most
Schuller
prolific people.
I think it's a mild mental disorder that makes people really prolific in writing.
Right.
And Lou's got me beat by a mile. He's awesome.
Well, there's another question. A lot of people wanted me to ask you about your Undercover Wiener series. It's an article about yoga. Can you sort of briefly talk about that one?
Well, I recently moved, and I've been working out in like an old beat-up football gym with rusty bent bars and no machines or anything, and that was really cool for a while. But I moved away from that, so I had to join a regular gym. And there's advantages and disadvantages to that. But so I joined this regular gym, and I kind of thought, wouldn't it be fun if someone who's like just into mainly weight training and thinks all these cardio classes are crap, wouldn't it be funny if I went in there and took these classes and then wrote about it? And I actually learned a lot. It was fun. You know, I think you should put yourself out there. A lot of people just can't drop their egos long enough, or they're so afraid they're gonna look silly. They don't live life at all. And I don't have that problem. So I jumped into a bunch of these classes. I think I took was a power abs class, and I took body pump, and I refused to do step because I watched the step class, and I just there are limitations. I'm not that secure in my sexuality, so I couldn't do that. But I took this yoga class, and this was the most surprising because I went in there as a total smart aleck. You know, I went in there going, "What are we gonna do? Contemplate our navels and pants and chew on our toenails and let our arm hair, you know, let the women with their arm hair pet growing out and everything." I didn't know what it was going to be. And,
I think your exact words were that you were expecting filthy vegetarian pothead granola munching pita dildos.
That could have been it. Damn vegetarian potheads. I went into this yoga class with just in a completely negative frame of mind, and I walked out a fan. I really did. It really surprised me. It was pretty basic. It was very, in fact, there was only five or six people in class that day, and for some reason, we all happened to be newbies. No one had ever taken a class before, and it was great. And what was really cool about it is, so I was thinking about Mike Robertson's and Eric Kersey's articles, and the Magnificent Mobility DVD, which is excellent. And what really struck me was, holy crap, they're giving it different names, but we're doing a lot of this stuff in this yoga class. And the flexibility stuff, the mobility drills, even some of the more challenging balance drills, it was great. I mean, it's stuff that high-level strength coaches have written about, and they use scientific terms for it, where yoga class gave it some, you know, weird sounding granola munching pothead sounding name, but it was the same thing. And I walked out of that class feeling great and feeling energized and revived. And when else are you going to do that much mobility or flexibility work? I mean, I'm going to go and I'm going to train. I'm going to go to the gym five times a week or so. I'm going to lift weights hard, probably four or five days a week. When am I going to come home and do an hour of stretching and flexibility and mobility type drills and balance drills and specific inner ab core training type things? I'm really just not going to do it. And if I'm going to do it, it's going to be 10 minutes, not an hour. So I'm a big fan now. I don't get a chance to do it very often, but I tell people, I don't care how hardcore you think you are, a once a week beginner's type yoga class is probably the best accessory fitness class that a weight trainer could possibly take.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've convinced me to even give it a try. My girlfriend keeps asking me if I will go with her.
No, you need to go without your girlfriend.
Has been no. Exactly.
No. Go without the girlfriend, because let's talk about the true stuff here. All right. They have poses in yoga that look remarkably like bedroom-style poses.
Yeah,
you know
I
what I'm talking about here.
Yeah,
and they will, and the instructor will even be like, arch your back more. And I'm like, yes, arch your back more. And it's great. So, you know, I mean, it's visually stimulating and physically effective.
Sounds good. I think you just convinced about 1,000 listeners.
Whoa.
Try not to pick a male instructor, and it's all good. Just don't go with the male instructor.
I just would be afraid if it looks like almost like a relaxing class, and I don't know if either you guys watched the show Jackass on MTV.
Oh, I saw that one too.
But
yeah.
they had one little clip where Johnny Knoxville went into a yoga class and he just like kept farting during the stretches, and like especially if it's 5 or 6, and I'm just talking as a guy right now, but if it was attractive women around, and I it's a natural occurrence, but what if you just pass gas and you can't go back?
I'm sure it happens. That's why you bring your dog and put him in the corner. blame your dog.
Just point when you hear the noise. That's what I do. Well, we'll jump into the next question that comes from Lou Schuler himself. Yeah, I know. This is the first question that we've had Lou submit, so it must be important. And I like the question personally. I'm curious to hear your views on steroid use by average meatheads who just use them for cosmetic purposes. Chris is one of the few guys out there writing about training who's actually tried steroids, so I think his opinion
I was doing the dramatic music.
You should find a clip of that. Yeah.
And also, T-Nation is traditionally honest about the pros and cons of steroid use.
Yeah, steroids are a tricky, tricky topic because I spend a good part of each day talking people out of using steroids. And then they look around in the archives and they find some articles I've written and some pen names I've used, because I'm pretty honest about what pen names I've used and stuff. And they find out Chris has used steroids. Yes. I don't really know. It's been at least 5-6 years, I think. Yeah, I did like the Flintstones vitamins version of steroids, where I did this is when 2-week cycles, really short cycles, were in vogue. I did one like 2-week cycle, and I took a few weeks off, and then I did one 3-week cycle. And these were very, very mild. I mean, a real steroid user would laugh at me they would say it's not even worth it to use the small amounts that I use. But, yeah, I scratched that itch. At the time, I was writing a lot of articles on steroids. I was interviewing a lot of steroid users. I had a chance to be on, Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, where I was taking them in and showing. I took a camera crew to Mexico, and we had hidden cameras in our glasses and stuff, and we purchased steroids. And
that was you?
Smuggled stuff over. Yeah.
Oh my God! I remember that.
Yeah. We smuggled some stuff over the border, mainly like empty boxes, because I wasn't a complete idiot, but we still wanted to see. You know, got my SUV searched and everything, and made conversation with the Border Patrol while my hand was on a bottle of steroids in my pocket. It was really intense. I was writing all these articles and stuff. So, yeah, obviously you're around it that much. You want to scratch the itch and see what's up. And I did. So now if I ever tell you this supplement feels like steroids, I know what I'm talking about. If so many people say that and they don't know what real steroids feel like, I got it now. I got the idea. It's not a lifestyle I wanted to live. It's not something I wanted to do. I didn't want to break the law all the time. Being locked in your bathroom and injecting yourself in the leg while your family's knocking on the door is not a, a proud moment, you know. And we can talk all day long about, well, cigarettes are legal and no one's really ever died of steroid use. I mean, you can't hardly, if you wanted to kill yourself with steroids, you probably couldn't. It would take years and years and years, and you probably couldn't kill yourself with steroids. So I'm very mixed about this. I think it's nuts that cigarettes are legal and steroids are not. I would love to be able to go to the doctor and get a quote-unquote healthy or safe and sane cycle of steroids, and the black market is horrible, and I would hate to be involved in any of that. But at the same time, I do. I spend most of my day talking people out of using steroids because, for one thing, steroids make you stupid. And I'm serious about this. They make you big and stupid, especially if you start really young. And the reason why here's the reason why I say that. Obviously, there's a smart way of using steroids. And I always say, no offense to those of you reading this on T-Nation or whatever, because if you're reading T-Nation, you probably educated yourself. So you're probably not one of the people I'm talking about. But you think about it, someone gets on steroids, they don't necessarily have to eat all that perfectly. They don't have to train all that perfectly, but they get results anyway. So they don't, therefore, seek out knowledge. Most of them don't. There's a few that do, of course. They don't seek out knowledge on better training and eating. So what happens is they don't know what they're doing. They train a little bit. They get on steroids. They get good results. They quit steroids. They can't get results without steroids. They get on steroids again. They eventually get themselves in trouble. They eventually quit training, to tell you the truth. Most people I know that have used steroids, especially at a younger age, are not training when they're in their 30s because they can't make gains without the steroids, and they can't afford to be on steroids either financially or health-wise all the time. So they don't even train unless they're on a cycle, and that is a horrible, horrible mindset to have. So yeah, I'm for steroids in that I think they can be used in a safe, intelligent manner. I think, especially for cosmetic reasons. Listen, okay, a guy can go to a doctor, right? You go to a doctor, you go to a special doctor, and you say, I want to be a woman. And they give you all kinds of psychological tests to make sure that you're not crazy. If that makes any sense whatsoever. Please, doctor, cut my penis off. Well, let me make sure you're not crazy first. You don't want a crazy guy cutting his penis off. So you go to the doctor, and you go to your special doctor, and getting your penis lopped off, what they actually do, they split it into, one way to do it, they split your penis down the middle, and they split it the other way, and they make it into fours. Then they tuck it inside you. And this is one of the methods you can do that. This is perfectly fine. There's no problem with this. Then they will give you female hormones to make you grow breast. Your voice will get higher. Your body hair will reduce. You will have all of these changes happen to your body by giving you female hormones. This is perfectly fine. These people have clubs. They have meetings. They have societies. They're trying to, in many cases, get their insurance to cover this. But God forbid that I want to make my pecs larger through use of anabolic steroids. I can get breast implants. I can get tits. But I can't make my pecs larger with the aid of a safe and sane cycle of anabolic steroids. So, yeah, that drives me nuts.
Great point.
At the same time, most people should not be using steroids because they're not going to do the research. They're not going to be able to make gains without the steroids, and I guess what I'd like to see, and TC's written a lot about this, is what I'd like to see is more of a go to your doctor sort of thing. Go to a doctor who knows what he's doing. If you can cosmetically get all these other surgeries done, then why can't you get a little bit of an aid in that? Not in mega cycles, nothing dangerous. Have your blood profile, you know, monitored, and all the unhealthy things that can happen with steroid use. Have all that monitored. If it gets too bad, then you back off. They prescribe the anti-estrogens and everything. Why can't we do that if you can go and be made into a woman?
Good point, and something to think about. Certainly a double-edged sword, and we sure appreciate your opinions, because like Lou said, you're one of the only, one of the few well-informed people out there who's willing to talk about it. So, good stuff.
Yeah, and the thing about it is I really think most people in the industry have scratched the itch.
Yeah.
Most of them have, and most of them that I know of that want to continue to do it, they get a very liberal doctor or a life extension type expert, and they get on doctor-prescribed steroids. Now, they call it hormone replacement therapy, but it is doctor-prescribed steroids, and it's very healthful. It's healthful in many, many ways. It's a very healthy thing to do. And sure, I mean, I'm in my 30s right now, but if I get into my mid to upper 40s, I would have no problems with going to get that checked out. And if I need it, then yeah, I would do that in an instant. But no more illegal stuff for me. No way.
Chris, you said you interviewed steroid users. Did you ever get a chance to interview either Mark McGuire or Barry Bonds?
You know, it's strange how those guys turn down requests for interviews.
How about Sammy Sosa?
You wouldn't believe that that those guys don't want to talk.
Yeah.
It's really strange. But when I was in, it was funny, when I was in Mexico, I did most of my research in Juarez, Mexico, because I'm a Texas boy. And so we went down to Juarez, and I befriended this pharmacist, and this pharmacist is apparently pretty famous. He's even more famous now that we filmed him and put him on HBO. But he's pretty famous in that it's where a lot of the baseball guys go. And he told me an interesting story. I said, so what, does Sammy Sosa come in here and get his stuff? And he said, well, what you see is when they're college players or they're minor leaguers, they come in themselves. And as they move up to the major leagues, then they start sending in other people. And the higher up they go, the more people they have between them, separating, you know, so you really can't figure out who these steroids are for. But I sat there, I hung out in this pharmacia for a couple of hours, and I just watched people buy steroids and OxyContin and stuff all day long. It was an amazing culture shock moment.
Well, I'll have to send out a couple emails to those guys, see if we can get them on the FitCast, because, I mean,
yeah,
we're a big enough name now where you think we could draw them, you know? About 1,000,
really?
1,200 listeners.
I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, Barry, Sammy, if you're listening to the show, drop me an email, and we'll see what we can do, all right?
Well, last question. This one is from Racer Bill at JP Fitness Forums. He asks, I'd like to hear more about Chris's transformation from former fat boy, or FFB for short, to today. Were there setbacks along the way, lags in motivation, tough times with friends and family, and finally, what did you do to overcome those?
Yeah, that's something that caught on like I never really thought it would catch on. I wrote an article a couple of years ago called FFB Syndrome, I think it was called, and FFB stands for Former Fat Boy. And what I noticed is I was a chubby kid most of my life, got even chubbier like my senior year of high school. By the time I was a sophomore in college, I think I was bordering on obese. I remember having to take a PE class, and they tested your body fat in the PE class, and it was the most humiliating experience in my life to have this cute college girl to take my shirt off in front of her and have her, like, grab these wads of fat that were on me. And I lost the weight in a stupid way by not weight training and running and starving to death, and realized I still looked like crap, kind of a skinny fat crap after that. So it was about my junior year in college that I first got into reading about Arnold's workouts, and then reading the Muscle magazines, and then a couple years later discovering Muscle Media and then T-Nation, and that's kind of where it all started. But I thought I was kind of alone in this, because what I realized was, as someone who has been fat before, you have to go by different rules as someone who has never been fat before in their lives. So I call this an FFB. You're an FFB. This is a former fat boy syndrome. Because if I did the normal mass diet or bulking diet that a lot of these people do, I would blow up. I could cut their calories in half. I would blow up. I would be so fat. And maybe it's because of, you know, they say, you know, your fat cells never really go away when you lose fat. They just shrink.
Mm-hmm.
And they can fill back up really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that we can't go by a lot of these rules. And extreme dieting, I mean, really trying to get to single-digit body fat, when you've been 250 pounds at 30-something percent in body fat, 8% is a freaking miracle. It's very tough for us to do that, but I've been able to do it. You know, I've been able to do the Velocity diet was the first thing that actually got me to single-digit body fat. I couldn't break 10%. And I would measure in all different ways, too, because everybody knows the best way to measure, the most effective method, the most accurate method of measuring body fat is whichever one gives you the lowest reading. And I couldn't get anything to give me the single digits. So I finally, the Velocity diet is actually the first thing that got me into the single digits. But I learned so much along the way of struggling with this for over 10 years that I kind of wrote up some stuff, how to diet like an FFB, how to do mass diets like an FFB, how should an FFB train. And there's a huge, you know, Racer Bill is right, there's a huge amount of psychology, family psychology even, friends and family. They just don't get it. And it's funny because I've made so many friends over the years by people coming to me saying, "That's me, man. That's me." And they thought they were alone, too, because they've tried to do the mass diets and just got really fat, and they've tried to do other things, and it just doesn't work the same way for them because of their past. But the interesting thing that Racer Bill mentioned was tough times with friends and family, and that's something else that I've written about a lot. There's a book out there called Toxic People, and there's several books out about it now. I can't remember the name of the female psychologist who started it, but Toxic People is basically toxic people in your life. Or there's all different categories of toxic people in her book, and these are people who put you down, hold you back, bring you down, try to destroy you either consciously or unconsciously. And there's all different categories, like people who lie to you and people who stab you in the back and people who try to pretend they're being polite to you but they're actually doing something bad, like, "Here, I've made you cupcakes," you know. You know, these people are wicked. But there's all different categories of these people. And the interesting thing about it is most of the worst toxic people are your closest friends and family members. And it'll happen when you start lifting weights and they find out you're using creatine and, you know, you're using that steroid. And if you start losing weight, they start, you know, they whether it's out of jealousy or whatever, you know, they start trying to sabotage you in a way of your weight loss efforts. So the FFB has a lot of challenges with friends and family because unless they've been in his shoes, they just don't know. Like they'll say, "Hey, what's wrong with coming home every night and having, you know, fried chicken and mashed potatoes with the family? You know, grandmothers give you this pressure all the time. You know, what's wrong with having that once a day? You eat healthy all day. You can have that once a day. Okay, maybe if you're an ectomorph, you know, all your life. If you're a skinny guy your whole life, yeah, you can probably get away with that. Former fat boys can't. You know, I used to get almost upset with a lot of our coaches that were even right for T-Nation just telling people to just eat. What's the problem? Well, you just got to eat. Listen, as an FFB, I have no problem just eating, okay? It's not that you don't eat enough to gain muscle. You put some peanut butter on it, I'll eat the bark off a tree. That is not an issue with the FFB. The problem with the FFB is if he eats like a normal person, he gets hugely fat. If he eats healthy, he maintains his 16-17% body fat or whatever. So he has to go really extreme to lose fat. And yeah, friends and family sometimes don't understand this because they're not that way. And the toxic people book actually says the best way to do this is the best way to deal with it is to confront them. And you can usually do this with humor. You know, don't get mad at them or anything. Don't get mad at grandma. But you can usually just confront them with it and ask them straight out, especially those people who are trying to sabotage you. And a lot of times you see this in relationships. I have seen marriages dissolve because one person was really into this whole health, fitness, weight training thing, and the other person wasn't. And that was fine when they were boyfriend, girlfriend. But, you know, when you get into being at the gym 4 or 5 hours a week, using some of the family income for supplements, what meals you cook, what food you allow in the house, it can become a problem. And so those people, I can't tell you how many times that I've worked with women who've tried to lose weight, and you'd think a guy would not be want to be married to a fat girl, but he'll do everything he can to sabotage her. And a lot of it's jealousy, a lot of it he's afraid he's going to lose her. If she loses weight and starts looking good, maybe he's got to act right from that point on, you know. So yeah, it's a big challenge, and the FFB just has to realize that other people don't get it. So we're a unique category, but apparently a very large category. So I've never gotten more feedback about an article than I did about bringing out the point of FFBs.
Great stuff, Chris.
Chris, I just want to say I join you in that crowd.
All right.
Being a, like,
we have a secret handshake, you know. I'll have to show you sometime.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was kind of a similar story. I was a sophomore in high school, though. Or maybe I was a freshman in high school between freshman and sophomore year, and I lost 30 pounds relatively fast in about 3 months. And it's the same thing. Like, everything you just said right now is 100% true in my life, from like family to friends to going on mass diets, going to, like, the same point. That's why I did the Velocity Diet, is to get to those single digits, and I was damn close. I made it to about 10 or 11%, but that was the lowest I've ever been in my life, so God bless you, sir. God bless you.
It's interesting. It's, you know, every time we publish an article, you know, a lot of people actually freak out at T-Nation because we don't really have – we do have some core philosophies and core beliefs, and TC outlines those very well, and our new splash page outlines those very well. But they freak out because we have so many different type of people that write for the site and do things. So, you know, I speak for the FFBs a lot of times. You know, Dave Tate speaks for the guys who care about strength, and that's it, even though he's made a lot of recent changes in that. John Berardi is just the opposite. This is a guy who couldn't gain weight in high school. So he's, you know, he's there for those guys. You know, he did a whole book on it that's excellent. And so, yeah, we try to have as many viewpoints as possible, and there's something out there for everybody. You know, whether you're the skinny guy or the fat guy, there's something out there for you, and there's a person out there who's been through it that can help you, that can help you through it.
Well, Chris, it's been great having you on the show. We really appreciate you coming on. Kevin and I just have a blast interviewing our guests, and you've been one of the most entertaining for sure.
Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, guys.
Definitely. Thanks, Chris. And before we head out this week, I just want to send out a huge thank you to our sponsors. First off, TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. And also Greens Plus. Greens Plus for great health. So thank you to them for supporting the FitCast. And that will pretty much wrap it up for this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 15. And for the FitCast, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And I'm Chris Sugar.
And we will see you next week on the show. Live from Denver, it's the FitCast. Something like that. We'll see you next week.